The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week, rain, snow, cold, all of the above, occasional warmth, we work our fingers to the bone to bring you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today, we're going to tackle the a different aspect of the important idea of deal finding, but first, just a little bit of what's going on out in the real estate world. Tomorrow night is my favorite Cincinnati REIA meeting of the year every year. It is the best and worst deals of the year contest, where members compete with each other to tell their stories of the best deal they did in 2025, the most creative deal they did in 2025, the worst deal in 2025, and also we have a category for best deal by a new investor. Now, normally, y'all out there in radio land don't get to come to that meeting because normally it is in person in December, but we thought that we would sort of open it up this year, put it on our nationwide chapter meeting here at the end of November so that everybody could listen in and everybody could vote for who gets the bragging. This is like People's Sexiest Man of the Year award for real estate investors, except women mostly win it. And I'm pretty sure a woman's going to win Worst Deal of the Year tomorrow night. And I'm pretty sure that woman's going to be me. So how do you come on out and listen in and learn and laugh and cry along with your fellow members? You go to CincinnatiREIA.com. That's Cincinnati, REIA.com. Go to the calendar, click on tomorrow, grab yourself a Zoom seat, and we'll see you tomorrow night at 6:30 if you want to just come and network for half an hour and ask questions, or 7 o'clock if you're only there to hear people's stories, CincinnatiREIA.com. So deal finding, always a popular topic in the real estate world and here on Real Life Real Estate Investing. And we've covered it in so many different directions over the years. Direct mail, cold calls, bandit signs, working with real estate agents, just on and on and on and on and on. And I think that after all this time, we might actually be covering it from this direction for the first time. Because my guest today, although he has done deals in many, many different ways, and he's done many, many different deals. He's done well over 1,000 properties for his own personal portfolio here at this point in time. He says that if you're looking for the way that has like the least drama and emotional connection to the houses, you need to be looking at ways of buying houses that involve institutions more so than they do individual sellers who might be very tied up with feelings about their own houses. My guest today is David Krulak, who has been around for a long time. He literally wrote the book, in fact, two books on the topic of real estate investing, bought his first 11 properties by financing 100% of them, and has used over 20 ways of buying properties, but is joining us today from his home in Pennsylvania to talk about these ways that might make you more comfortable. Dave, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Thank you, Vina. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Or maybe I should say welcome back, because we did talk about 11 years ago here on Real Life Real Estate. And at that time, we were talking about your book, which is called My Life in 1,000 Houses. Is that, have I got the title correct?
How I Started with Nothing and Made $12 Million.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, that's also an excellent title. But you, we were talking the other day, and you said, you know, for people who are like afraid to deal with sellers and deal with those kind of negotiations, that, that can get away from the actual numbers and facts of the deal and more into what are you going to do with my grandmother's house after you buy it? Or, you know, are you gonna change the 100-year-old cabinet in the corner that has, is actually falling apart? That, that there's an easier way that people might feel more comfortable with, and it has to do with not dealing with sellers who are tied up with their property. So give us some examples of what you mean when you say unemotional sellers.
I've bought property at tax sales. I've bought over 100 properties at tax sale. I've bought properties at sheriff sales. I've bought properties from HUD. I bought 25 properties from HUD, two of which I bought this year. And I've bought property from the VA. And seven times when I bought property from the VA, they also financed them to me, even though I'm not a veteran. So I got veteran financing, even though I wasn't a veteran. And some people say, well, you can only have one VA mortgage. At one time, I had six VA mortgages at the same time, and they were all on VA foreclosed properties.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kind of properties that I'm talking about. And I say that it's dealing with dispassionate owners.
Mm-hmm.
These are entities that don't care about the wallpaper that grandma put up in the house or the remodeling that, that their father did, you know, when they were a child or anything else. These are people, institutions that basically want to get rid of the property. They are the classic institutional don't wanters.
We're going to take a quick break, David, actually, because it's just that time. And when we come back, I want to go a little more into what kind of properties you personally are looking for and what you do with them, just to give folks a some background on why this works so well for you and why it might work for them as well, and also give listeners a chance to ask questions. You can do that, listeners, at 877-772-9658. Again, 877-772-9658. Or you can just send us an email. The address is vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. I'm talking today to David Krulak, who is Pennsylvania-based, but does buy properties in other places. And we're gonna get some background here, but what we're really talking about today is maybe buying your deals from places like tax sales, sheriff sales, HUD, VA. I assume, David, that that you would not object to buying one from Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or any bank that had repossessed a property and had put it up for sale, because I bet they fall into the category of dispassionate institutional owners as well. So if you have any questions about those things, if you wondered about them, wondered how to get to them, how to find them, how to make the offers, 877-772-9658 or vinoradio@gmail.com. So, David, talk about your business. Talk about what it is you're looking for, what kind of prices you're trying to pay, what you do with the properties, why this fits so well with what you do.
A lot of what I'm doing is rentals, long-term rentals. So I'm buying properties, and I'm looking for properties that I'm going to be getting at what I consider to be a bargain price. This year, I bought two properties from HUD. When they list the property for sale, the price they put on the property has nothing to do with the amount of debt that was owed on from the previous owner. Their procedure is they hire an appraiser who appraises the property in as-is condition, and then that's what they list the property at. So they're appraising the property, and the price they listed at is what an appraiser told them it's worth in its as-is condition, whatever that as-is condition is.
Mm-hmm.
The two properties that I bought this year from HUD, I got for 70% of what they said the as-is appraisal was.
Hmm.
So I'm getting a 30% discount on the price. That's very comfortable for me. It makes it much more profitable. Generally, the houses are going to need work, a varying amount of work. Sometimes the amount of work needed is pretty minimal. The one house that I got this year only needed some cosmetics. We cleaned, we painted, and we didn't even do all the flooring, but we did some of the flooring.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put it up for rent. And they had listed that property initially at $378.5.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the market for more than a month, so typically they lower the price after a month. They don't always do that, but it's typical that they lower the price, and they usually lower it by 10%. So they lowered the price to $347,000, and then I put a bid on it. And so this means that it's already been on the market for more than 30 days. A bunch of people already looked at it, and for one reason or another, they either didn't bid or they didn't bid sufficiently enough to get the property. I bid $255,000, and I got the property. So it initially was $378,000. I got it for $255,000. We did mostly cosmetic work, minimal work to it, and it's currently rented for $2,250 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good deal to me. You know, I got it at a low price, and I'm getting good rent for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, it sounds like this is probably not like a C-class property. It sounds like it's probably a B property.
It might even be better than that. It was built in 2006, and it's 5 bedrooms and 3 baths and a 2-car garage, and it's on a cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a pretty nice property.
Okay, so your rental business is about, I'm looking for nice properties that are going to appreciate well, but I'm looking to get them at prices that also make them cash flow in the meantime.
I've been updating my buy box. In the past, I've bought pretty much anything I could find that I thought was a bargain. But recently, in this year, almost all the properties I bought were single-family, detached houses built since the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at newer product, and I'm selling, some of my older products that were built in the 50s, or I'm working on a rehab now of a property that I've owned for over 20 years that was built in the 40s. So I'm getting rid of some of my older stock, and I'm buying a new inventory that's newer built.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For what reason?
I'm looking at this long-term and generational, that I'm buying properties that I think are going to be easier to maintain, need less work. No, I've owned properties as old as being built in 1840. There weren't even any building codes then. Things were built that are not code compliant, or things are not up to date. You know, some properties don't have central air, don't have updated electrical, don't have updated plumbing. By buying newer properties, I'm circumventing the problems of old properties.
Mm-hmm. I remember, and I'm sure you remember, when I first started investing in real estate, I was most interested in buying rentals that I could afford. And a $255,000 rental would not have fit into that category for me in the early 1990s. Are these strategies you like, tax sales, share sales, HUD, VA, other bank-owned properties, do they work kind of across property classes? Am I still going to be able to find those cheaper C-class properties and, you know, maybe even more expensive A-class properties?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Particularly when you talk about share sales and tax sales, the scope of the properties that are available is pretty wide. One of the counties that I go to, their tax sale list 30 days before the sale is almost 3,000 properties.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of properties on the list, and they go from falling down to mansions.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere in between.
And I'm sure some of those are land.
Some of those are land and lots. Some of them are unbuildable lots. You know, mm-hmm. lots of different reasons why things get at tax sale. One of the things that I found that I thought was curious is that people who were given the property or inherited the property seem to have more of a tendency to let it go at tax sale and share sale. And I think they figure, well, they didn't put anything into it. No, easy come, easy go.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen properties that people have inherited and then, you know, they don't even have a mortgage on it, but they don't pay the taxes and they let it go to tax sale. No, it doesn't seem to be logical to me, but mm-hmm. people do illogical things.
Yeah, I think in a lot of cases, as I run across those people, it's because they couldn't afford to actually do the probate, and so they don't actually own the house, even though they might have been living in it for years. And then secondarily, of course, they can't afford the property taxes either. So, that's... I do see a lot of properties that go to tax sale here that it is the estate of so-and-so, or it's so-and-so and any heirs, because the county is aware that the actual owner of the property is deceased. So, that's a really good way to find those unprobated probates that everybody...
And you see the same thing on the share sale list. You see where if the estate is going to share sale because the mortgage is in default, or it's going to the heirs of somebody. And one of the things that the list provides you is a list of people who are don't wanters. So you can work the list even before the sales, you know, contact the people and, you know, see if you can work out a deal before the sale and not let it get to sale. And we've done that too.
Mm-hmm.
We've also worked the list after the sale for properties that didn't sell at the sale and are still available. Some of the people don't even realize. They know that it was on the tax sale list, but they didn't know that nobody bid on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, no, that you can use that list after the sale even. So the list is a great help to investing either before the sale, during the sale, or after the sale.
Very good. We need to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more to David about this strategy that he likes maybe for you of finding deals where the seller is not somebody who's going to be super emotionally involved with the deal? Because a lot of investors, particularly newer ones, are very nervous about the idea of telling somebody that they can only give them a $255,000 for their house that they'd like to have $370,000 for. But I'm guessing HUD has never one single time called up David Krulak and said, "We're really upset with you for making that bid." So if you have questions for David, give us a call at 877-772-9658 or send them in to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. I'm talking today to David Krulak. And a listener was nice enough to send me an email, David, saying that the book title that I gave was not your book title. That's actually Mitch Stevens' book title. So yours is 12... How I Started With Nothing and Made $12 million, and I assume that's available at Amazon and whatnot, all the usual locations. Awesome. Okay, so we're going to take some listener questions. We're going to start on line one with Chris calling from Ohio. Chris, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, I just want to thank you for taking my question. I actually do have Dave's book, and I think it's great. A lot of quality information there. And a ton of examples, so thank you for that book. But my question was, with the turbulence that we're currently seeing regarding AI, jobs, economic data with housing, overall, where do you see the Midwest ending up or other states? How far of a dip is anticipated? And how much concern do you see for real estate investors, and how can we prepare?
Well, David, how is your crystal ball these days?
I don't have a crystal ball. I'm positive on real estate. I think real estate's still a good investment. I bought 7 properties this year. Obviously, I'm not bailing out. And I'm not sitting on the sidelines either. People need places to live. And I do have other examples that are lower priced, if you like me to give you another lower priced example. That's not only, $300,000 houses that I'm looking at, and I bought other houses that are lower priced too.
Yeah. So, given that, come on, we're in a recession. Why won't they say that out loud? People are getting laid off right and left. The prices are like out of control on everything. You know, sure, inflation's over, except my chicken is still costing me 10 times what it cost me in 2019. Do you have a particular go-to in a situation like that? Like, I want cheaper houses because that's what people can afford, or I want to get the more expensive houses because when we come out of it, those are going to be the best houses.
What I've seen at the share sale and the tax sale, which I think are an indicator of the economy in general, you know, if the numbers of properties that are available through share sale, I think that's an indication that people are having more and more difficult times. But what I am seeing is that the numbers of foreclosures that are coming to sale is about the same as it was last year. I don't see a drastic change in the number of foreclosures, and I think that's one indicator of the economic trend. If I saw, at one time during my career, there were 2 or 3 times as many foreclosures as I see today. So, and I've been through 2008 and other downturns in the market. I'm always a buyer. I don't care what the economy is doing. I never sit on the sidelines.
And, Chris, you know, I agree with that basic sentiment that it's just like never up to, it's never a good time to be sitting out to the real estate market. You just have to sort of feel it out because, you know, in these bad economic times, that's where there's like more good deals. I was just telling some folks today that I've given up on the whole crystal ball thing, because we are in an unprecedented situation right now. This is, yes, we've seen real estate cycles before. We've seen sellers markets before. We've seen buyers markets before. We're right. We're 2026. We're right on time for the 18-year real estate cycle to end, if you believe in that sort of thing. But the situation we're in now that we have never been in before is we've got a country that has $37 trillion in debt and cannot possibly, we don't have the demographics anymore to grow our way out of that. So we could be easily looking at something akin to, if not worse than, what happened in the 1970s, which was, you know, stagflation followed by a long, 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 just real estate just didn't, wasn't really going anywhere for a really long time. I mean, it was keeping up with inflation, but barely that, because interest rates were so high, it was hard for people to buy properties, and yet people were still buying properties. I was way too young at that time to be signing contracts, but my father bought some of the best deals of his life from 1972 to 1985, when everybody else was like, oh no, real estate's terrible, oh, they just changed tax laws, now you got to depreciate your apartment buildings over 31 years instead of 15 years, and now they're not good deals anymore. I mean, like David said, people have got to have a place to live. The question is, where do you think they're going to want to live? Do you think they're going to, and be able to live? Do you think it's going to be in the, in apartments and houses and cheaper stuff and more expensive stuff? What's it going to be? Don't know. Don't have a crystal ball. I know for myself, I'm sitting on a lot of dry powder at the moment because I expect there to be some really great deals coming up, over the next just few months. And I'm going to be buying very conservatively because I learned my lesson in 2005 going, oh, I'm going to buy it 70 cents on the dollar. It'll be fine. Never mind that prices are incredibly high. And then in 2009, those houses weren't worth what 70 cents on the dollar had been in 2025. But, you know, people still wanted to live in them. So I just didn't sell them. And now they're all worth like three times as much as they were. So It's a challenging time whenever the market switches, no matter which direction it's switching. Like I remember in 2012 and 2013, investors who'd gotten in the market in 2007 and 8 were going, what's happening with prices? They're going up so fast. What in the world? Like, I can't keep up with it. Like, people were distressed about I don't know what to pay for properties anymore. And of course, people were distressed in 2007 when they didn't know what to pay for properties anymore. And I mean, really, okay, so what's the key? Get around other people who are figuring it out and who've got pieces of it figured out and stay around them. I mean, that's what real estate communities are for. And that's what you can do. And the people who can put on their adult person underwear and go out there and make investments that make sense, even if the market drops by 30%, rents drop by 30%, will look like geniuses 5 years from now for having done it. Which is not the totally satisfying answer you wanted. You wanted me to say, well, the market's going to dip by 7.25% in northern Ohio. Don't know.
No, I thank you both very much for the answers. That was incredibly valuable. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your call, Chris. Appreciate that. If you have a question for us, you can give us a call at 877-772-9658 or send an email to askdina@gmail.com. Now, David, you said you haven't seen a lot more properties coming to foreclosure sale than you had in the prior year, but all the stats say that foreclosure activity is up. Now, foreclosure activity means everything from that first stage where I've defaulted
to
all the way up to the actual sale. And I think it's fair to predict that we're actually going to see more foreclosures in bank-owned properties when the year ends. We're going to have seen more in 2025 than we did in 2024, because the year-over-year change in October, 19%. 2024 to 2025, there was 19% more foreclosure activity, and that's just going to continue through 2026. So what you're talking about here is very relevant. The foreclosure sales, the tax sales, the back end of that, which is HUD properties, VA properties, and bank-owned properties. Now, I have a question here from Michael, who is from Pennsylvania. He says, how does David feel about those tax sales that have heirs when the heirs can come back 9 months later and take it back, or else you, the buyer, get stuck with the heirs' inheritance tax? Is that a thing in Pennsylvania?
Yes and no. Pennsylvania does have a state inheritance tax, and there are no exemptions. So if you inherited $100, you'd have to pay tax on that. The way they collect the tax is when there's a deed transfer, and the deed offices in each county are agents for the state in collecting the inheritance tax. And they also can charge interest from the date of death until the day you pay. And sometimes that can be years of a lapse. But we have mitigated some of that. We've had to pay inheritance tax. We've mitigated that by determining what the value of the property was. I think we've had inheritance tax go back like 20 years even. So the starting point for that is we figure out what the value of the property was 20 years ago, which in most cases is going to be pretty much smaller than it was today, and then figure out what the tax is going forward from that. And we pay that the smaller amount. I've also seen where the state is negotiable, and that you can, if you owe a certain amount, that you can negotiate with them and end up paying a lesser amount. The tax doesn't go away by the tax sale. There is no redemption in Pennsylvania on tax sale like there is in a lot of other states. And in Pennsylvania, the first tax sale, all the liens transfer with the property. So if you buy a property and there's a mortgage, you get the mortgage too. The mortgage is not wiped out. So there's a lot of interest fees about buying a tax sale, and it varies from state to state. And even within the state, they might have different procedures. One of the tax sales we go to, they don't take cash. And they don't take personal checks, and they don't take business checks. One of the other counties we go to, you have to register weeks in advance, and they have to vet you. And if you fail the vetting, you're not an eligible bidder.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's a lot of intricacies to the tax sale, and that, in effect, reduces the competition because it's more difficult to do.
Yeah, and that the question that Michael asked, because I'm guessing that wherever he is, there is a right of redemption, because he said they can come
not
back.
Not in Pennsylvania, there's not.
Okay.
No, he must be talking about some other state.
He may not be from Pennsylvania. Redemption. It just says PA under his name, so I just assumed that meant Pennsylvania. It could mean public accountant. I don't know.
Could be so, Palo Alto.
Could be Palo Alto. But his question and your explanation are great examples of something that we need to say out loud in case people didn't hear it, which is if you're going to play in these local sales, whether they're tax sales, commissioner sales, trustee sales, anything that's regulated by your state, you need to know the rules before you start doing a bunch of research and raising your hand to bid and whatnot, because there are states that have very long rights of redemption for both tax sales and sheriff sales. And it doesn't matter that you went in there and did $100,000 worth of work. Those folks can still come right back and just claim the property back for the amount of the mortgage or the taxes that weren't paid. So understanding and studying and really learning what the rules are for those things, crucial if you're going to play in that field. David, we need to take one more quick break. When we come back, we're going to answer some more questions from listeners, and you can send yours in to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today to Dave Krulak about buying properties in ways that a lot of people don't know how to, but that also don't involve emotional sellers and lots of back and forth negotiation. Because David, most of those the ways that you buy these properties, you basically just make a bid and they say yes or no or counter, right?
Yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm going to go check out the property to the extent that I can. I'm going to decide what I can pay. I'm going to tell you what I can pay. And you tell me that I can or can't, or I can pay this higher price. And if I don't like your price, then I don't accept your counteroffer. I mean, it's fairly sterile compared to the way that a lot of people do it. So we've got some questions here, several actually along the same lines, which is, how do I find HUD properties, VA properties, sheriff sales, or tax sales?
Well, that's an easy question. All the HUD properties are on the HUD website, which is hudhomestore.com. And it's open to anybody. You don't have to be a realtor. You don't have to be a broker or anything else. It's open 24/7. And you can look at anywhere in the United States, even the United States territories. I've seen properties on the HUD website in Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, Hawaii, Guam. Anywhere that's part of the United States, there can be foreclosed properties. And the numbers vary, you know, depending on what state you're in. I looked at the HUD website today, and I think the state that has the most HUD foreclosures was Texas, with 195 HUD properties. Ohio only had 16. Pennsylvania has 55. So there's a lot of properties available on the HUD and HUD website, and you can look at the HUD website anytime, and they update it multiple times every day. So if you look at it in the morning, a property that's on in the morning could be sold by the afternoon, and vice versa. A property that wasn't on in the morning could be added in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a website for the VA properties. It's VRM, Victor Raymond Michael, properties.com. And that has a list of all the VA properties that are available to purchase. Again, in Texas, there's 384 of those properties available today. Florida has 120. Georgia has 139. Alabama has 90. So there's lots of properties that are on these government websites that are available for anybody to look at any time of the day or night.
And then what about the sheriff sales, the tax sales?
They're usually handled at the county level. And in Pennsylvania, most of the counties only have tax sale twice a year. And most of them have tax sale. The first tax sale is usually in September. As far as sheriff sales, some of the counties have a sheriff sale every month. That would be at the larger counties, like Philadelphia. And some of the smaller counties might only have a sheriff sale every quarter, once a quarter, four times a year. And they publish those lists in advance because they have to give notice to people. They have to give notice to the person that's being foreclosed on. They have to give notice. In the case of sheriff sales, they have to give it to any junior mortgages, have to be notified. And if they're not notified, their mortgage is not wiped out. So it's critical that the notices get to the junior lien holders.
Let's talk about money. You mentioned that when you buy VA houses, sometimes you can get VA to finance them for you, but HUD's not big into offering financing to investors on their properties, and the sheriff doesn't offer financing, and the county treasurer doesn't offer financing, and yet you got to come up with the money in some short time frame. So you don't go to the...
At the sheriff's sales here, you usually have to put 10% down the day of the sale, and you have a couple weeks to come up with the remainder. At the tax sales, you need to pay 100% the day of the sale. There are opportunities if you're looking to buy an owner-occupied house on the HUD website that you can get an FHA mortgage if it's owner-occupied for 3.5% down. And there's also some other programs. There's a HUD program called Neighbor Next Door where you can buy a house off of their HUD list at 50% of their asking price if you agree to live in the house for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. But is that applies to, like, teachers and policemen and EMTs and stuff, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
It applies to police and firemen and teachers and EMTs. And it can be someone in the household, like if your son or daughter is one of those categories that would qualify on the mortgage. It's an excellent program to get into a house cheaply with 50% knocked off the price.
Okay, but like in terms of, so tax sale, I've got to bring money with me. Sheriff sale, I might, depending on where you are in the world, I might have 15 to 30 days to come up with most of the money. HUD, I might have 15 to 30 days to come up with most of the money. Where are you going to get the money? Because the sheriff, like, you can't get it from a bank because the sheriff can't let you into the house to get an appraisal, which is what the bank requires.
Right. We've been using lines of credit. Some of the lenders have no collateral lines of credit. Also, hard money is available or private lending. So there are ways to get financing as long as it's not the standard type mortgage where they have to come and do an appraisal and get inside the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to need a super quick answer to this one, David. This question is from Cindy, and she says, I've always been afraid to bid at sheriff sales or tax sales because I'm not allowed to get into the property first. How do you overcome that fear that the property is going to be in terrible shape when you take possession?
Usually these properties are vacant, but not always. You can walk around the property usually, particularly if it's vacant. Technically, I guess that might be trespassing, but I've never heard of anybody being arrested.
I don't think that's technically. I think that's the definition of trespassing is going on to somebody else's
property.
Yeah, but
I don't think anybody's going to charge you with trespassing if you're walking in the yard. Breaking and entering, that's another question. I see a lot of properties that people do break in. And I'm looking at the property, and someone's already broke the door in.
That's probably not investors. That's probably plumbing thieves.
Well, I think it's both. I looked at a property the day before the sheriff's sale, and it was secured. And then I was the high bidder, and so I went back the next day right after the sale. And somebody had broken in. I don't think that was thieves. I think it was another bidder at the sheriff's sale.
Oh, my goodness. I certainly hope not. That is not what I want to think of my industry.
Yeah. I like to think that the inside of the house is going to look like the outside of the house. You know, if there's deferred maintenance on the outside of the house, it's probably going to have deferred maintenance on the inside of the house. Also, there's lots of telltale signs. I think I've bought 17 houses that had blue tarps on the roof. That's a pretty good indication that there's a roof problem. One house that I bought had four tarps on the roof and concrete blocks holding the tarps down. And I bought it, and it did need major roof work. So it wasn't any big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I have been surprised. I bought a house at tax sale that looked decent on the outside. But when I got inside, it had a big mold problem. And I ended up selling it as is to a builder who was looking for winter work for his staff so he wouldn't have to lay them off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that worked out well. I made a little bit of money. I didn't make a lot of money, but he was able to get in there, and he took care of the mold problem and remodeled the house, and he sold it at a profit.
Well, David, thank you for sharing your insights with us today. We are unfortunately out of time, but of course, listeners, we will be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.